I'd like to introduce our main speaker for this evening, Dave M. from Rancho Bernardo.
My name's Dave Mackey, and I'm an alcoholic. And I want to thank you for having me here as a speaker. It's a privilege to be asked to speak at any meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And thanks, Sam, for asking me. I've known Sam. I met Sam in 1990 at the La Jolla Speakers Group. That was where I went when I came down. I came here from Los Angeles, where I was part of the Pacific Group in L.A., and La Jolla Speakers had a connection there, and I attached myself to that meeting, and I met Sam, and Sam was about a year sober, and Sam's still sober, and he's a friend, and he's part of my life. I'm glad of that. And I want to thank Vito for being the 10-minute speaker earlier, and his girlfriend Shelley for driving us here. I am pleased to learn Vito was a Marine. You know, there's a general impression of Marines, if you're a Marine, that you drink. And I am an exception to that. I was in the Marine Corps for 4 years, and the first 2 years of which I did not drink. I got myself attached to a group of Christian Marines, and we were going to church. And I was quite happy with that, and I was not a drinker. However, I decided at about 2 years in the Marine Corps that I ought to do some more traveling, and I asked to be stationed in Japan, which they gave me. And in Japan, instead of going to church, I found my church in the bars outside the base. I found out that I was like that a lot more than going to church. And I became quite a heavy drinker, which led to various problems. My early history was really, it's some events in my life that were different, if you will. I was born in England, and I had an aunt who had married an American Army officer, and when he retired after World War II, they bought a ranch right up on the Oregon California line, and their ranch was within walking distance of both Oregon and Nevada. It was quite a remote area, and my parents had been asking me, now at 12 years old, this is quite unfair, I think, they're asking me what I want to do when I grow up. What the hell does a 12-year-old kid know? I don't know. I knew that there was something called a chimney sweep who would run around the streets with a black face and having brushes that you run up the chimney. That was one career I knew about, and a few other things. But I told my mother that I wanted to be a farmer, and she relayed that to her sister, then living in California. And she said, Dave wants to be a farmer. And my aunt said, send him out here. We'll make a farmer out of him. So my parents put it to me, how would you like to go to California and live on a ranch? And I thought about that approximately 2 seconds, and my answer was immediate. It was yes, I want to do that. So here I am at 12 years old, and I'd been a pretty good student in England, actually. The school system there is quite different than it is here. And I had started high school. Not everybody went to high school. In fact, out of my grade school class of about 40, there were only three of us, we were admitted to high school by examination. So it was a big deal to go to high school. And I was in my second year of high school, age 12, and that was normal for where I was. The people in at Surprise Valley Union High School, where I wound up, asked me where I was in school, and I said, second year of high school. So they put me in as a sophomore in high school at the age 12, which is, you know, well, I figured I was pretty good in school. I could keep up with that, which actually I could. It did cause some problems. I did not socialize well with, you know, kids in my class were a lot older than me. And I remember when I'd go to the gym, wind up in the shower after the gym, and I'd be comparing myself with the 18-year-olds and falling short. So anyway, I wound up going to these bars over in Japan, and I found out my masculinity doubts were really not valid, which was exciting. Figure that out. Anyway, that was where I found positive things to drinking. I drank a long time, and my drinking progressed. When I got out of the Marine Corps, I didn't, even though I'd been drinking a lot, you know, the prior 2 years in Japan, I did not become a drunk immediately. Although I got a job in swing shift job, and I'd get out around midnight and go to the bars and I would drink, but I was not immediately becoming a drunk. Fact is, I made some attempts to go back into school, but I really didn't quite know where I was going with that, and I got to get my head together. I'm going off on two different routes. I was in college before I went to the Marine Corps, but I had no direction really. I didn't know what I was doing. I was majoring in agriculture because I'd been in the farm, but I really didn't know what I was doing. And I went down to the recruiting office as soon as I was old enough, thinking I wanted to go in the Navy. And I went up to the Navy recruiter and told him, I'm not a citizen and I want to get in the Navy. And he just shook his head and he said, no, we can't take you. Go over there. And he pointed across the room to the Marine Corps recruiter. And so I walked over to the Marine Corps recruiter, and they took me immediately. They didn't seem to care that I was a citizen or not. So that's how I wound up in the Marine Corps, as I say, and got out of the Marine Corps, went to work, and started my drinking. At that point, became one of going out to the bars, you know, after the swing shift was over, going that. But I drank for a long time, and kept, you know, I'd get occasional drunk arrests, because when I start drinking, I don't like to stop unless I'm forced to. This went on to a point. I drank a lot, but was not getting into real trouble. I was able to keep a job, but my drinking progressed over a long period of time, and kept getting worse. Along the way, I met a girl that I liked, and she told me that she didn't like drunks, and I guess I managed to conceal how much I drank from her, because she, when I asked her to marry me, she said yes. And Now, I thought of that period of time, I'm marrying a girl who's pretty straight, and I kind of need to be straightened up a bit, and that was going to help. To my memory, I slowed my drinking down when I married her. Now, my slowed down drinking was still too much for her. She kept, after not too long a period of time, she was complaining about my drinking habits. And I can give you one example. I thought I was pretty good, you know. I would cut down my drinking so that I was mostly only drinking on the weekends. I'd go out to the bars, and, you know, the bars are fun. At first she'd go with me, but then she stopped. And one incident where I came to in the morning, and my wife is on her knees in the living room floor, scrubbing out she had a couple of dresser drawers in front of her, and she's scrubbing them out with soap and water, which seemed to me to be a little bit too much on the, you know, too cleanly. And I asked her why she was doing that, and she said, well, you urinated in these last night. This is my cleaned up drinking. Anyway, this went on, and my drinking never slowed down. You see, drinking had become, over a period of time, it had progressed till it was very important to me. The fact is, I had a lot of, as I indicated before, a lot of personal doubts about myself. I never felt I could communicate with others, and the drinking helped. You know, the drinking, I remember I put down a glass, and I'd feel okay. And that feeling comes out of that glass. It's in that alcohol. And I need that. Well, I had mixed feelings about my wife. She wanted me to quit drinking. I did not want to do that. Since she's threatening to leave, I didn't want her to leave. But I came back from a drunk one night, and she's gone. And in fact, she's not only gone, but everything in the house is gone, too. I've been told nowadays that you're legally, I guess you're in California at least, you're legally required to leave a knife and a fork or something like that. But she didn't know that. Anyway, she left me, and I had mixed feelings about that. I was on the one hand kind of relieved because now I could go back to having fun, and on the other hand, how dare she? Because I'm a good provider. I was working. Maybe I get drunk a little bit, but I'm a good provider. I'm working all the time. But anyway, she's gone, and I am going back to what's fun for me, and things taking a turn now. The amount that I'm drinking is starting to affect my performance at work, and things are getting a little bit worse. And with me, as an alcoholic, my answer to things not going well is have a drink. And so looking back at it from this perspective, I'm drinking to overcome the effect of my drinking. And I think that's very strongly related to alcoholism. It doesn't define it, perhaps. But in my mind, that's alcoholic. Anyway, I continued that for quite a long time, and things were not going well with me. I started to do various things because, you know, my problem is I'd be in charge of the universe because I have that kind of ability. Somehow or other, that wasn't coming about. But anyway, I'm exploring various methods to fix what's wrong with me and get me back on the track to being what? Some success. One of the things I did, I got involved with positive thinking, for lack of a better term, group. One of the things they did was convince me I should boost my image by having a luxury car. So I went out and bought a new Jaguar sedan. to this is going to up my image. Now, I'll tell you, that's a really wonderful car, if you've got it. I expected to get, having a Jaguar, I should have women all around me. Oddly enough, it seems like it takes more than that, just having a Jag, because that wasn't happening. And it's particularly bad when you do things as I did. I lived at a small Spanish-style house. In front of the house was a lawn sloping down toward the road into about a 3-foot high fence or wall, retaining wall. And I know one time I parked the Jaguar over the wall so that the wheels were spinning over the street. These kind of do... It kind of give you a bad image, I guess. I met a little girl came down there in front of that house one time. I don't know where she came from, but she was there and she was talking to me. And she pointed up at my house and she said, "There's a zombie lives there." I remember looking at her and thinking, you know, how did she get that? So it's only me living there. I guess this kind of indicates, you know, something whose life is not going well. But I was able to keep working and keep financing my drinking as it got worse. The Jaguar was a big deal. Like I say, I parked it over the wall one time, and another time at about 3 or 4 a.m., I came to behind the wheel of that car, and I was headed straight on the Santa Monica Freeway in L.A. I was headed straight to the center divide, and I whipped the wheel around and just simply clipped the front left fender and continued to drive until the engine froze because I had damaged the radiator and the coolant had all leaked out and the engine froze. In the Jag, and you know, the just car stopped, and people came out to tow me away, and somehow or other the cops came too, and I wasn't taken in. They towed the car off, and anyway, that was close to the end of my experiment with luxury cars. I had been exposed to AA. I went to my first AA meeting some 4 or 5 years before I got sober. And I was hoping to look good to my ex-wife. And I went to some meetings. But, I didn't identify as an alcoholic, and I didn't keep it up until much later. What happened was, while this was going on, in spite of my drinking, my wife and I were still seeing each other. She wasn't living with me, but we had a back-and-forth relationship going on. And I'm, as I said, I'm thinking that I'm becoming something spiritually powerful. I'm learning. That's what convinced me to buy the Jag, was I'm becoming spiritually powerful. And my wife and I had a date to go away for the weekend. This one day, and I stayed up the entire night. I never went to bed. I just drank the entire night. And when she came over and we were driving away, and I guess I was getting kind of strange. I decided that with the power of my mind, which I was learning, I could make that Jaguar. This is a term I coined, intermolecularly transmigrate through the car in front of it. Now, let me explain that. You see, things like this desk, it looks solid, but it's actually mostly space. There's atoms there, and there's more space than there is solid material. So conceivably, if you get that car together, and here again, with the power of my mind, I could make the one car, as I said, intermolecularly transmigrate through the one in front of it. And I'm sort of halfway believing this. I'm making passes at the car in front of me, which scared my wife. My behavior was scaring my wife. So we pulled over somewhere, and she wanted to get away from me. That was her objective, was to get away from me. And something at this point, something split in my mind. I really went berserk, and I attacked her and knocked her to the ground. She was seriously hurt. I actually fractured her skull in the process of that. And I was handcuffed, and I was taken into a nut ward is what it was. And they didn't keep me long. They held me overnight. I remember they gave me shots to put me out, and nothing would put me out. I guess you'd call it wired. I was staring at the ceiling the whole night. I remember there was a man in the next bed who was being a frog all night long. Rivet. Whole night. I never did go to sleep in spite of what they were giving me. But they let me go with my sister and a brother-in-law let me go from that. But this was a dramatic effect, and I really scared the hell out of me what I did. I had never been physical with my wife, and there was no intention of me to hurt her, but I had, and it was after that happened, she divorced me right away, which I didn't like, and it was a turning point in my drinking, because as my drinking had been heavy enough before, as I indicated, but now it became just pretty much nightly. And as I say, I was drinking to overcome the effects of drinking. My life was going bad, and I was drinking to make it better. And it don't work that way. I went on doing that for about 3 years after that event, with life getting better. I dropped down to, I remember weighing myself at 128 pounds, and which is 50 pounds less than I am now. I described myself as looking something like an olive with a toothpick through it, because of that 128 pounds, a lot of that was beer belly. I was not looking good. This is where my drinking was taking it. I did something about, scared me that I was down to 128 pounds, so I did something about that. I stopped weighing myself. And at any rate, this culminated in my last drunk. I don't remember my last drink. I remember that I was with people. It was a Sunday night. I was with people, and my last thing that I remember is I was congratulating myself that I was behaving all right, which may indicate that sometimes I wasn't. And I don't remember my last drink, but what I do remember is I came to the next morning, pulled over on the side of the San Diego freeway up in the San Fernando Valley, and I was on the edge of the freeway coming to, and I did something quite different that morning. That was a Monday morning, and it was the 12th of May, 1975. I did something quite out of character for me. I called up a man that I knew to be a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I said the magic words. I said, "I need help with the program." And that was my prayer, and it worked. Since I did that, I have not had another drink. And that's been 44 years now. And if you're clapping, clap for AA. I still didn't know I was alcoholic. For all that had happened to me, I was a heavy drinker. I'd cop to that much. But alcoholic, no, that's bad news. My life's bad enough. I don't want to add alcoholism on top of that. But I came to a meeting. The man I called asked me if I could get to this meeting that night, and I did. And they took me out to coffee after the meeting. I happened to get in. This is just by chance. I mean, I think I was very fortunate. By chance, this man was a member, active member, of the Pacific Group up in L.A., which is a large, active group. I think probably people here. Are there any members of the Pacific Group in the in here tonight? No. Well, it's the largest AA meeting there is, regularly scheduled AA meeting. And it started out in 1963 with about less than 12 people, and by a man who's since become quite well known in AA, Clancy Emerson. And he tells a story how, you know, the meeting started off with less than a dozen people and then grew up to be, they had around 30, and he was excited about that. Then he pissed somebody off and he went back down to 12 again. But that was, and now the main meeting on Wednesday night, there's close to 1,000 people go there regularly. And I'm still part of that, even though I live down here. I maintain my connection there. You know, I urge anyone who's new here, find yourself a regular meeting, be part of it, and that's been perhaps the most important thing that I did. I did not embrace the fact that I was alcoholic. I wasn't thrilled with that idea, but I knew I was in trouble. And I didn't drink. And gradually, as I went to meetings, I began to see people, hear people that I could identify with. And I asked somebody to be my sponsor and started to work the steps. And as I did, I began to discover things about me, stuff that I was not aware of at all. And perhaps the most dramatic was somewhere around, well over a year sober, I did a fourth and fifth step. I remember in the fifth step, I was committed to one thing. Even though I still had doubts about the fact, you know, am I really alcoholic? I had doubts about that, but let's see, where was I going with this?
Started doing your inventory.
Yeah, I was doing an inventory one day. And I was recognizing me in that fifth step. One of the things as I read that fifth step, it became hard for me to read it. Because even though I'd written the damn thing, It was hard for me to read what I had written about myself. And I remember thinking, the thought came through to me, excuse my language, but my words were, what a goddamn asshole, self-centered asshole you are. And it was a turning point. I never recognized me as that. I thought I was a pretty wonderful guy. And I'm doing this fifth step, and I'm seeing myself as somebody very far from that. And it was a turning point. It was a change. And somewhere, I remember a week or two later, I didn't immediately have that burden lifted from me, which I was hoping for. But a week or two later, I remember thinking, I feel like I'm on solider ground, as if I've moved up a step, if you will. And my life was continuing that way. If you're new here and wondering why you're here, and is this the end of your life? You can't drink anymore. Where's the fun? That was pretty much my thinking. But I didn't know what else to do, and I knew I needed help, so I kept coming. And gradually, I started to make friends, and opportunities came around that, you know, that I really hadn't expected. I met one man who was familiar with British Columbia, the remote parts of British Columbia. We went on two remote area backpacking trips into British Columbia, northern British Columbia. I met another guy who wanted to go. We had a member of the group who was Air New Zealand crew member, and one friend of mine wanted to go over to New Zealand. I went with him. These opportunities come around, and just a lot of things. Gradually, things start happening there, which are, you know, my life hasn't gone. These opportunities come around. I say, you know, I had been at one point, it looked like I was going to be a good student until my drinking got out of hand. I started going back to school again, and I was doing all right. And then I looked at what I had to do I was studying engineering, and I remember thinking, you know, if I go on this rate trying to get a degree, it's going to take me 10 years. You know, all I could do is go to one class at a time, basically. But I did something quite out of character. I credit this to having a program. I had applied for a scholarship from the company I worked for, and it was awarded to me just about the point I would have quit. That scholarship was awarded to me, and paid for me to go to USC and study engineering. So I look back on this, and how in the hell I was doing it, I don't know. I swear to God I couldn't do it today. I was going to meetings pretty much every day. I was had started running, 4 or 5 miles every day. I was going to school. And what else is more? I don't know, you know, but I look back on it and think, how in the hell was I able to do that? But I did, and I, you know, sometimes it got fairly difficult, and it's fairly large demands on my time. But I just kept going, and it kept showing up. And I learned that here in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, do the next indicated thing, do whatever the best thing is, and things, opportunities open up, and I'm able to take advantage of them. And I was able to finish that degree. I'm going to meetings. I'm involved in Alcoholics Anonymous. There's one man in here who was with me back in 1975, Mark. And, you know, my life just started getting better. I don't have a clock in front of me. Somebody...
You have about 13 minutes left.
Oh, okay, that's good. Anyway, that was opportunities came around, and I was able to take advantage of them. And somehow or other, there's something about this program that works in that way. It's a spiritual connection. I've come to believe that. Now, God doesn't go around saying, you all make it possible for you to get back to school. But somehow or other, in the application of this program, those opportunities do come around. And in my case, at least, I was able to take advantage of that and do more. I should say, one of the things I did was, you know, I had my first sponsor I had for 7 years, and I was calling him daily, and he's a good man. And about 7 years, I began to think, you know, I'm 7 years sober, and I know a lot about conducting my life. Maybe I can help him. And he thought otherwise and fired me. I guess I had to learn a little humility. So what I did is I asked Clancy if he would sponsor me, and he agreed to that, That was a big deal, because I knew that in asking him to sponsor me, I'm implicitly agreeing that I'm going to do it his way. Because he sponsors a lot of people. He don't screw around with them. If I got problems, he feels that the answer to that is, you know, the typical sponsor answer to problems is go to more meetings, this kind of crap. But I made up a concession on my own part that if that's what it was going to be, that's what it was going to be. And he rarely gives me advice like that. I started calling him regularly, and it was an example of the third step in action. I'm turning my life over to somebody else and being willing to follow direction other than mine. What has come about because of that is, as I said, I've had many opportunities. One of them was I had, as I said, I my ex-wife, the woman I had married and who divorced me after I hurt her physically, I was never happy with that. I always wanted her back. I used to credit people who have time in the program. You know, if you got 2 years of sobriety, as far as I was concerned, you knew everything. And I'd go up and talk about the problems I was having with my ex-wife, talk to these guys with, you know, what to me was a lot of time on the program. And it's an odd thing. If you're new here and people are coming up to you with unsolicited advice and you're wanting to get rid of them, I got a suggestion. Start talking about your relationship problems, and they disappear, or at least that was my case. But I was trying it anyway. There was one man who gave me some advice, one guy who had some time on the program. I didn't see it as the answer to my problems, but I followed his advice anyway. He told me I should go to a hospital, actually, and pick up a man there who was in his 80s and take him to an AA meeting. And that was his answer to my problem. So I did it. I don't know why. I didn't like the idea of that, and I didn't think it was cool to be bringing some guy in his 80s into an AA meeting. Now that I'm in my 80s. But anyway, I did that, and miracle of miracles, my wife came back. Now, this is a true story. But, however, I don't always mention the fact. I followed this man's advice, picked up this 80-year-old and took him to AA meetings, and my wife came back. However, there was a 10-year lag between my taking him to meetings and my wife coming back. So it wasn't just an immediate fix, which is what I was hoping for. But nevertheless, it did happen. And I was sober somewhere around 10 years. And we started seeing each other again, and now we've been remarried now for 25 years, which is now I say that with some reservations, because not everybody wants to hook up with their ex, and I'm not urging that you do that, but I'm telling it as an example of a really wonderful result. Because people have trouble with this kind of thing. I had trouble with this kind of thing. And it became possible through the program of Alcoholics and Anonymous that we got back together. And today I'm living with the woman that I want to be with. And that's really a marvelous thing. And it's just one of the things that can happen if you adopt this program. I'm an alcoholic. And I don't drink anymore. And one of the things that I heard, which sounds really kind of weird, that if you're an alcoholic, your problem is not alcohol. Now, that sounds pretty damn weird. And because certainly I had difficulties with alcohol. But the fact is, and what I've come to believe now, alcohol was my solution to my living problems. I drink and things feel better. And, if my problem was the alcohol itself, the answer is simple. You simply quit drinking, and it becomes a one-step program. But that's not the case. Alcohol is a symptom of our condition, which we call alcoholism. And that's why we have this program. That's why we have the steps. That's why we urge people to get a sponsor and to do the steps with somebody else's help. At any rate, I say my life has gone incredibly better since I came to that conclusion. I started to say some of the good things that have happened to me, and I think can happen to anybody. If you're new, it's a fair guess that if you're new in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, it's probably a good guess that the year 2019 has not been a good one for you. And now you find yourself in a room full of people who, by their own admission, can't manage their own lives. But not only that, Bill, they'll be more than happy to manage yours. And the sad thing is that probably better. Now, I wouldn't have believed that. It took me a substantial length of time, a year or more, to start realizing that was the truth. What kept me coming was a fear that I would go back to drinking, that I came to recognize I was alcoholic. So what I did was establish that program of going to meetings with regularity, having a sponsor I was in touch with, and willingness to follow somebody else's direction. And I think we have perhaps the most powerful guidance for living that I know of. And I got it through being a drunk, and I am still an alcoholic, but I have a program for living that I believe in. And thank you all for having me here.